Welcome to the GGB podcast. We're doing another in our continuing series of GGB Live at ICE. And my guest today is Dr. Sally Gainsbury from the University of Sydney. And this is something I've wanted to do for a long time. So Sally, thanks for joining us. It's really good to be here. We did it virtually one time. But
we did. It's nice to have been able to make the trek over from Sydney to Barcelona.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Right, the beautiful, beautiful city here. I've really enjoyed it. And, you know, it's still summer in your neck of the woods, but not too bad here.
Yeah, no, it's terrific to be here. Very eye-opening. It's a lot larger than the Australasian Gaming Conference,
for sure.
That's for sure.
For sure. So, you know, I personally think you're one of the best problem gambling researchers in the world. I've known a lot of them. I've covered the NCPG conference, now the ICRG conference, International Responsible Gaming Association conference. I've covered that right from the very beginning. I've known a lot of the researchers, but you seem to take it to the next step. Why don't you give us some of your background? And I know your mentor was Dr. Alex Bozinski, a real legend in the field. So I guess that kind of helped you get a head start, right?
It certainly has. Thanks so much, Roger. So I trained as a clinical psychologist, but I've always really been a researcher and working with individuals and their family members, people who are experiencing gambling problems. It's so important to understand that human aspect.
But
taking a step back, I actually grew up in a family that had a lot of horse racing in our family. Yeah. So I worked in pubs, and so I've been on all sides of this. So I've always approached gambling as a really practical issue that a lot of people are enjoying, a lot of people are employed in, but some people do experience harm. So instead of working clinically one-on-one with people, I really am driven to work in the systemic areas. How can we look at the products? How can we look at the regulation? How can all the different stakeholders, including the individual, but not only the individual, be looking at how can we make this more sustainable and prevent harms before they have to come and see someone like myself or my clinicians in our treatment clinic? Mm-hmm. How can we prevent the harm from occurring in the first place?
Sure. So in terms of your research, I know, I've seen and read a lot of your papers down through the years, but you've done some really interesting things recently. Why don't you fill us in on some of those recent studies you've done?
Yeah, well, at the moment I'm really looking at lots of different areas, understanding how to prevent harm from doing a lot of what we call co-design, working with the individuals who we're trying to influence.
Right.
So that means talking with people who gamble regularly. That's really our target demographic. Both from people who end up developing harms, and more importantly, people who don't engage with resources, because we know right now there are some technologies that can help people, for example, put a limit on how much they want to spend or help people to gamble more affordably.
Right.
But most consumers aren't interested in engaging this because they perceive that for someone who has a gambling problem.
Right.
So what I've been working on is looking at, from the operator side, we're analyzing large data sets to understand what are the risk markers that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
But importantly, a lot of people are using this kind of AI approaches. We've actually been able to match customer responses.
Mm-hmm.
So we've conducted surveys and then matched that with the player data.
Right.
So we have not just what the operator has in terms of having their age or postcode. We have their self-report. How are they experiencing harms?
Mm-hmm.
Are they experiencing negative consequences? What's their financial situation?
Right.
We're then able to use this and look at the data to identify what are the indicators of someone who's gambling in a way that's related to harms, but also in a way that is not related to harms, particularly amongst people who are gambling in what we would call an intense way, people who can obviously do this with protective factors in play.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know it's not enough just to say, well, they're gambling intensely, so they must be experiencing harms.
Right.
I mean, for some people they are,
mm-hmm.
but for others they might not be spending very much, but they're still experiencing harm. So it's really important we use an evidence-based scientific approach, and we can then use this to inform regulators and operators. These are some of the things that if you see that in a player account, you might want to flag that and then work out what's the level of intervention.
Sure, right.
That's on the operator kind of regulatory side of what they can do using the data they have available. We're also building a tool for consumers. But really importantly, this doesn't mention problem gambling or risky gambling. It's really designed to be very consumer friendly, trying to overcome these barriers of people not wanting to engage with tools. So we're designing a tool that's about helping people to manage their budget, because
mm-hmm.
we know that a lot of people gamble with multiple different operators.
Right.
And so it's difficult to count out how much you're spending, how much you're winning, how much you're losing.
Right.
You know, that's, some people do it manually, but we've created a tool where people can upload activity directly into the tool and it spits out a summary. And so it's designed to help people track their gambling spend with the idea that to be able to know how much you can afford to spend, you actually have to be able to track in how much you're winning and you're losing, because it might not come as a surprise. What we've shown is that people aren't very accurate estimating how much they're winning and they're losing. And our question is, well, how can you make an informed choice, which is the whole the underpinning of being responsible, if you don't know this information?
Right.
So it's the first step, a kind of a precursor before you can do anything else, is making sure people are actually informed and they can then make a judgment of whether their gambling is affordable for them.
Yeah, okay, great. So I mentioned the International Center for Responsible Gaming. You got a nice grant from them a couple of years ago to start the Center of Excellence in Gaming Research. How has that been going, and has that really enhanced the reputation of the University of Sydney?
Yeah, it's a really interesting way to think about it. It has, although we certainly have had some feedback about working with operators. There are those who don't think it's appropriate to work with, despite all the ways that we have to ensure that their research is free from any influence of any of the stakeholders, and that the ICRG has the same the same barriers in place. There is still some criticism around the optics of this. To be honest, as you mentioned, I've been working with Professor Alex Kwasinski. Our gambling research center is not new. The ICRG funding is fantastic, and that happens to be the name of their award, but we've been established for many, many years. But that's that international recognition is fantastic. We have a new board of advisors that have people from the UK and the US and Australia, from outside of the gambling field as well, which is really integral to ensure that what we're doing is going to be having an appropriate influence on the stakeholders. And also we're involving consumers as part of the design of all of us. So we're really working iterative, that everything we're doing isn't a bunch of experts going away and then coming up and saying, here's your solution, but working with all the stakeholders as we progress through the research to make sure it's really going to be developing policies and products that are ready to be implemented.
Okay, great. So when I first started reporting on problem gambling, it was pretty much well known that Australia had the largest propensity for people to gamble per capita. Is that still the case?
Look, it's difficult to say. Things are changing so quickly. How often do they do these sense checks? Certainly Australia does have, at the last surveys I've seen, the highest spend per person. But interestingly, the participation in gambling is decreasing as a proportion of the population, but we're still spending a lot of money. The year-on-year growth for gaming machines in particular continues to go in an upward trajectory. So it does suggest that there's now a smaller amount of people spending more money, which is somewhat troubling to see, is this an affordable spend? We know that some people do spend more than is affordable. But there is a very large availability of gambling, and it's very normalized in the culture. We have a lot of gaming machines in our local neighborhoods, very, very high numbers. And we also have wagering online, but we don't have online gambling in the broader sense, so casinos and slots and poker, still all offshore. It's actually illegal to be providing those services.
So also, I've discovered years ago that there seems to be a cottage industry in problem gambling research in Australia, that there's a lot of organizations and individuals that are doing that research. It's just not all peer-reviewed as your research is.
It's interesting. I've been working in this area for a while now, and it has really changed. And it's probably reduced a bit because of the funding from appropriate providers of funding has really reduced. So some people, that a lot of the treatment centres affiliated with the university have now shut down. Ours at the University of Sydney is the only university-based gambling treatment clinic, which is really disappointing in terms of being able to do research with people who are experiencing harm or informed by clinicians. And there has been much less funding from governments to do gambling research, which means we've reduced our capacity, and a lot of people are moving into other fields to do research in other areas. Certainly there are people doing research from different fields, so it's really exciting. For example, I'm working with people from economics who are doing gambling research, which is really exciting, people from business and public health. But we do also have people who have their own views on gambling, which is, it all makes the field a richer place. I've actually seen probably more RG Tech
Okay.
As an industry, yeah, probably right, not right. so much in Australia, but certainly here we've got, you know, suppliers and providers who are trying to come up with this as an industry,
right.
Either through as a way to meet compliance or as a way to make, a lot of operators now are looking to potentially assist them in ways to make their products more sustainable.
Sure,
so it's
right.
been a really interesting shift from being only researchers or community organizations to technology providers
right.
now seeing responsible gambling as a product.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think the industry is doing in responding to the problem gambling issue? I mean, every large company has a responsible gaming policy. And they kind of vary a little bit. They're all not the same. Do you think that the industry is doing enough right now to really make people aware that they don't want them to be harmed?
Yeah, it's really interesting, and look, it's hard to say as an industry as a whole.
Right.
It's probably too massive to say that. And it is right that there's much more companies who have a dedicated position.
Right.
It's still often a compliance issue, which I do appreciate
right.
and understand, and has to be to a certain extent. But some of the larger companies are having a standalone position outside of compliance as well,
right.
which is really good. And we're certainly working with lots of different operators who are genuinely committed to this. I think I'd still like to see it more of a shift away from compliance, because compliance often says if you identify someone with a gambling problem, you need
right.
to take action, which is, it's important, it's essential.
Right.
I'd like to see more of a shift towards how can we identify people before they have a
sure,
gambling
right.
problem. How can we look at people who are escalating or having markers that suggest they might be going towards
right.
responsible gambling? Often these people are identified as lucrative players and they're spammed with marketing and promotions or given VIP handlers,
right.
which is fine if you've done a check to make sure they're not gambling more than is affordable.
Sure.
So I'd like to see more of a focus on the larger group of customers who are regular customers doing more affordability checks and ensuring people are gambling at levels that they're comfortable and are affordable for them.
Right.
I mean, from my point of view, obviously not from a shareholder or working as a gambling company,
right.
but I still see this as a really integral part of sustainable business models, that these are the customers who are going to be able to respond and say, this is a company who has my best interests
right.
at heart and want to see me as a customer over the long term, as opposed to giving me promotions and trying to get every cent out of me
mm-hmm.
right now.
Right.
And then, now I'm burnt out and I
right.
can't come anymore.
Right. So I did a report when Massachusetts first opened up. They adopted the GameSense program out of British Columbia. So they took me down to one of the casinos in the state and walked me through the process. Later it turned out that not a lot of people, they could go through the process, but they wouldn't stick with it. Is there some way, and it was also very complicated to do, is there some way we can simplify that and,
yeah.
and hopefully, they would understand the odds of the game, first of all, which I think if you don't teach anybody the odds of the game, it doesn't do any good at
yeah.
all. But have you seen any kind of programs out there that are successful in doing that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And again, I mentioned some of my colleagues. I also work with people who work in neuroeconomics and
right.
behavioral
yeah.
economics. And I think that design, that human-centered design is really critical.
Right.
But what we shouldn't do is require individuals to rely on their willpower.
Yeah.
To every single time they go into a casino or log onto a gaming site, decide for themselves when to walk away, when's the right amount. We need to have it more automated and frictionless
right.
so people can be set up such that they are gambling with, sort of like buffers
right.
around
yeah.
them. They can do what they want, but they're not going to get, into harm
right.
Because they've already made the decisions and set that up, and that's the ecostructure
right.
that they're surrounded with. So I think that's what we need to do, is make it more frictionless
right.
and make it easier for people to gamble, that they're in control of deciding how much they want to gamble, but then
right.
that's set in place. And if they can customize it, they can turn off their marketing, or they can,
right.
They can
exactly.
they can customize it for themselves so that they're gambling in the way they want to,
yeah.
as opposed to having to decide, oh no, I'm not going to respond to that marketing, or that constant
right.
test on willpower isn't an appropriate way
yeah.
for people to gamble in an affordable way. Like, nor doing anything. If you're constantly offered cake, at some
right.
stage you're probably going to, with the best willpower
sure.
intended. So we need to design an ecostructure, and I think that's the responsibility of the industry and the regulators to put in place those requirements, that the customer actually gets to choose the environment that they want to gamble with. And maybe that's some operators coming up with their own, having that point of
right.
differentiation that customers can choose to bet with as well.
Yeah, yeah. And I think one of the things I found is people would set a limit and they'd hit that limit really quickly, and then they'd have to buy in for more. And so I think probably the answer would be to set a more rational limit.
It's a really good point. And if we break down this behavior of setting a limit, and I agree that if you have it in place and you set it once, then you don't have to think about it right. all the time. But it's actually a really complicated behavior. If, right. If I said to you, how much money do you want to spend on, takeout a month, or what's your coffee budget?
Right.
And it's hard to know. And you hear that, you say, oh, I really want another coffee, and how serious
sure,
is that?
Right.
But it's a very complicated behavior I'm actually asking you, and
right.
even more so with gambling. So what we need to do is actually provide more tools for individuals and say, okay, well, these are some suggested limits based on what we know, based on healthy gambling guidelines. We know that you probably shouldn't be spending more than 2% of your annual income. So we've
right.
got kind of a rough estimate. So
sure, right.
set something less, 2% or less of your income per month.
Right.
We know that, on average, this is how much people are spending, and we can get more personalized. We can say, Roger, you on average have been betting $50 a month.
Right.
Go ahead and put it $75, but let's not put it at $5,000.
Yeah.
Right, based on your own metrics.
Right.
So there's nothing to stop operators from providing more personalized anchors
mm-hmm.
instead of just saying, hey, set a limit,
sure.
good luck, figure that out.
Right, yeah.
Set a limit, or I've even seen some operators, I want to say, either Finnish, but
yeah.
the Scandinavian countries are always really good at this, saying, Roger, we've seen based on your recent play history that you should set yourself a $75 limit. We're going to put that in place for you. Just click here. That's all done.
Right.
It's customized. It's appropriate for you. It's frictionless.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to press a button.
Right.
As opposed to get in an email, click here, do this, drill down here, think about it.
Right.
We want to make it easy and personalized, and there's no reason that we
sure.
can't be doing this.
Yeah, no question. So you mentioned online gaming is really not legal in Australia, but it is in a lot of the U.S. Online casino is only legal in 7 states, but sports betting, of course, is legal in almost every state now. One of the arguments for online gaming and responsible gaming is you can see exactly what they do, because everything is transparent.
Mm-hmm.
You can see every bet they made, every dollar they deposit, and things like that. But at the same time, the online casinos are marketing to their high players, using that same technology. So, do you think that regulators have a place to go in there and say, let's limit this? Certainly the marketing, but
yeah.
let's let them know when their gambling has changed.
There's so much there. And also the regulators, they're not reinventing the wheels. Yes,
right.
if it's new in these states, but there's other regulators
sure.
who've been dealing with this. You can look what's happening in Australia. We've just had it's 18 months ago, a report
right.
was handed into the Australian government they haven't responded to yet, suggesting that advertising be completely eradicated
right.
for online wagering. In Australia, you can't advertise gaming machines at
right.
all.
Mm-hmm.
And in most states, so similarly, they're saying there should be no advertising for sports wagering
right.
because it's wall to wall, and the community is complaining. And particularly when those most vulnerable,
right.
they're the ones who are responding to those promotions and bonuses. Some states now we have limits that you can't have a sign-up bonus because people are opening up accounts,
right.
and all these bets are really inducements for people who are the most vulnerable.
Right.
So I think there's a lot that you can do as a regulator to start saying, for example, just because you have one product, it doesn't mean you can get an advertisement for a casino product.
Right.
So don't advertise across verticals and encourage people to shift. Advertising is really powerful, but it's also a way to reduce costs and to level the playing field.
Right.
If no one can advertise, then
right.
It's kind of a cost neutral, and you can then send more money designing your product such that if players wanted, players know. Once the players know that it's there,
right.
They can come and find it. And
yeah.
it's about the better product experience for the player
right.
in terms of how they're actually going to make their product selection, as opposed to which is the flashiest ad or who has the quote unquote best celebrity.
Yeah,
so
sure.
I do think the regulators do have a lot to look at other jurisdictions and say, where have the problems arisen that we want to get ahead of? Because it's much, much harder to put things back
sure,
than
right.
to be cautious in releasing them slowly.
Yeah, right. So, we talked about identifying problem gamblers, while they're at the table or the slots or something like that. Is there a way to kind of intercept them before they have a problem or right as they started having a problem?
Yeah, definitely. And there's no tipping point where there's someone's a, you know, okay, one day you are and then you're not a problem gambler. There, it is a spectrum, and people we know oscillate between them. Like, it's a behavior. It's not a personal trait. You don't all of a sudden become something, someone.
Right.
It's the behavior that's problematic. So you can have, you know, people typically do have what we might call binge sessions, and then they have what we would call this kind of seesaw pattern of intense gambling, and they pull themselves back and then they gamble more intensely. So you can recognize behavioral patterns and risk indicators, and you can do that these days because a lot of gambling is account driven.
Sure,
we can do this in real time to say, you know, hey Sally, looks like you've spent more than intended. Here's a voucher for a cappuccino. Why don't you go take 10 minutes? We'll pause your machine for you. If you want to come back, you can be here. But these sorts of things, it's non-judgmental. It's not saying, you know, what are you doing? You've got a gambling problem, but it's getting people to stop, even self-appraise. Hey, Sally, you've spent $200. You typically only spent $20.
Yeah.
Just, you know, check in that you're aware this is your spend. I might go, oh, I got carried away, or, you know, I wasn't thinking, or, oh, yes, no, I'm fine. It's my birthday, and that's what I've decided to do. But these sorts of automated interventions don't rely on humans, so it's sometimes less confrontational than having to come and tap someone on the shoulder. But they can happen over the journey. So if you keep escalating, then some sort of staff member might come over and go, hey, Sally, just checking in, how are things going?
Sure.
And they go, yep, no, it's fine, all good, or actually, okay, I don't know, I probably, like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, some people respond to these things in different ways, but there's certainly lots of opportunities. It should never be that the first time a customer has an intervention is when they have all the red flags.
Right.
That should just never happen. If someone's gambling in a venue, whether online or offline, for a sustained period of time, there is so many opportunities to identify what could be risky. It doesn't have to be 100% definitively risky.
Sure.
That's why the approach is, you know, curious, non-judgmental, positive. But it's not a very good player experience if the first time you're tapped on the shoulder is, okay, you know, you've gone too far now.
Yeah, sure. So a lot of casinos are providing account information for their players, how much they spent all year, how much they lost, or how much they won, hopefully. But do you think they should be required to provide that information for their players?
I actually do.
Yeah.
We see from our clinical, when we work with people in treatment, that providing them with a history of their spend is an incredibly eye-opening experience for people.
Yeah, for sure.
We have to actually do it very carefully because it can be very upsetting for a lot of people to be confronted with that information.
Right.
So you have to do it quite delicately. But had people had access to that information throughout their history of gambling, that wouldn't be so confrontational.
Sure.
In Australia now, for about a year and a half, the government has required wagering operators to send a monthly statement to every customer that's been active in that month, so that they are required to see their past months, their transactions, and they can compare that to previous months, just like you get your electricity bill.
Yeah.
I think it's actually bonkers that consumers don't want this information.
Right.
Like,
sure.
You know, when would you be okay with, oh, I just pay money to the utilities company, but I don't get any kind of receipt or opportunity to view this and keep track on it. Especially with something like gambling, where it's so up and down, and we know through our research how inaccurate people are in understanding not only their net outcomes. Interestingly, I was surprised to see people really underestimate how much they win.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that people would be really aware of their wins, because usually people have that really strongly, you know, and you've always met someone's like they can tell you that win they've had. But we found people were underestimating their wins, because what we think is happening is they don't actually realize that win. They had it, but then they gambled it away.
Right.
So to them, they never cashed it out.
Sure.
So they actually were winning much more money than they thought they were.
Yeah.
So that's important information, because how can someone make a decision about their gambling if they don't actually know how much they're spending?
Sure.
I think it's really the pillar of informed choice.
Yeah.
And I can't think of an industry where you can't get a receipt.
Right.
And that would be acceptable for people.
Sure, yeah. I receive people on Facebook, so, oh, I won $5,000,
everyone's
I'm playing blackjack,
winner.
And you know, they kind of forget all the times they lost, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that would be, you know, kind of appropriate for them to see that, for sure.
Yeah, in an appropriate way, and again, not in a confrontational or a negative way, but in a positive, this is you to track your gambling.
You could provide it for them for tax reasons, you know. In this country, you can write off, in the U.S., you can write off your losses versus your wins. So you could even say, well, this is just for your tax records.
And there's always problems. People say, oh, what about the privacy? What if they're, you know, someone else sees it?
Right.
You know, these are problems that
can be designed around. Well, Sally, it's great to catch up with you. Next time we'll do this, when I come to Australia, we'll do it in person, and you can give me a tour of your offices in Sydney, and I'm looking forward to that for sure.
Well, thank you so much, Roger. It's always such a pleasure to have a chat, and happy to share more information about any of my research.
Yeah. And you'll write some stuff for us, too.
Sounds good.
Okay, good. That's a deal.
Thanks.
Thank you. To read more about the topics presented in this week's podcast, visit ggbmagazine.com. To subscribe to GGB's executive summary, go to ggbnews.com and sign up. Don't miss any edition of the GGB podcast. Subscribe on Spotify, Amazon, or Apple Podcasts today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast.